there is so much comparison even within motherhood that you just really don't need more. You're so, this is what I tell any of my friends who are planning to be mothers also. I'm like, everybody lies. Anybody that is telling you exaggerated tales of how fantastic they were and how they did some Herculean tasks about their career or about being moms is lying. You do you, and you realize that it is just as tough, if not worse, for other people. And once you get through it, then you come back and you do a nice interview and you give gyan to everybody. But at the bottom of it, like, it is tough for everyone, no matter what they are doing. And it is tough enough without comparing to other people.
Welcome to the Sum of Everything podcast, where we discuss a little bit of a lot of topics, ranging from spirituality to finance and everything in between. I'm your host, Aishwarya, a serial hobbyist with an unquenchable thirst for learning, especially through new experiences. In this podcast, we will scratch every itch of curiosity, explore various perspectives, step out of our comfort zone, and experience some of everything. Because after all, we are just that, a sum of all our experiences. So let's dive right in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Sum of Everything podcast. Today is going to be the last and final episode in the Celebrating Moms series, and we have a very, very special guest today. She is my friend and senior from law school, and she's currently working in the space of policy. Apart from being a lawyer with a specialization in climate change, she is also the author of a published book and, as I know her best, a wonderful dancer. She works with children and brings in socio-emotional learning into the classroom. This is called SEL, and she does this by way of bringing arts into the classroom. And with this short introduction, I'd like to say, please welcome Sushruti Tripathi, my friend from law school.
Hi, Aishwarya.
I know you have two beautiful and very, very, very small young children. So I'm so glad that you have been able to make time for this episode.
I am very happy to be here, very glad to be here, and especially to do this with you. It's great. I've been listening to the podcast and truly very excited to be on it as well.
Thank you.
Some phenomenal work here.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you like it. So this is, as you know, a series that we are doing about celebrating moms, because Mother's Day happened to be on May 11th. And I took this as an opportunity to deep dive into mothers of different eras, as in people who've been mothers for 30 years plus, and people who have been mothers for 20 years plus and 10 years, and now you, whose older one is just turning 2 and the younger one is less than 2 months old. So I want to ask you a question that I've been asking everyone. Was motherhood a choice for you?
Absolutely. It was 100% hands down, definitely a choice. In fact, it's a choice I think I made even before I decided I wanted to get married, because I've known for the longest time that motherhood is something that I would really cherish. So I had, in fact, been looking forward to the point of time in my life when I would get to experience it. And I suppose you can also hear my younger one.
Yes.
In the background. So definitely a choice.
It's interesting. I find a lot of people my age who say the same thing. In fact, the person who was on the episode before yours also said the same thing, that she wanted to adopt even before she was anywhere close to being married. And she was actually inspired by Sushmita Sen and her adoption of her two babies. So I find that women in general definitely want children, but don't want to deal with men. So I think that is a running theme.
I guess for a lot of people that is, but I will tell you one thing. Mm-hmm. Having a partner just makes the entire process so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so hands-on with both our children, right from like nighttime feeds to diaper changes and everything else. So it really, and the children also sort of get two parents And I see that there is a different side of my child that comes out with each of us and another one that comes out when we're together. So for me personally, it has been better, so to say, that I didn't have to go the way of single mom adoption. Of course, I'm in awe of Sushmita Sen and anybody else actually who does adopt as a single mom or even a single dad for that matter.
Yeah.
Because if you want to experience parenthood and adoption is the only choice available to you, then I think more power to you and go ahead and do it. But just speaking from like my personal experience, I think it has just been great to have a partner who's equally in it or for the sake of it.
That's nice. And I'm sure that it makes it a much more doable process because it's not easy. Parenthood is by no means easy. And as someone who has simply observed and not even experienced it, I can say that it comes with so many, many different challenges. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it does come with a lot of challenges. And these challenges are often unique for every parent. And some challenges, of course, are common for us all. But I think everyone has their own strategy of navigating these. And like whatever suits you, essentially.
Right.
It is challenging. You get through with some help, whether from family or from friends or from everyone, neighbors. And yeah, I think anything that's challenging, that's how you get through it, right?
Okay. So you did say that you wanted children even before getting married, but you're in your 30s with two kids. One is an infant and the other one's a toddler. And this is at a time where a lot of your peers have rather choosing not to take this path or not to get married or not to have kids. So the concept of dinks is growing, you know, double income, no kids. And people are finding that that kind of a lifestyle suits them much better. Did you at any point reconsider this whole marriage and children thing? Was there any point in time where you said, you know what, I know I had these dreams of being a mom, but maybe that's not for me?
Actually, no. I didn't second guess this decision at all, in fact. Because to me, I couldn't have devoted myself completely to just one aspect of life. And again, this is not a comment on anybody else's choice. Because all of us have different priorities and all of us have different ideas of what we want our lives to be like and what we want to live. And so this is with the caveat that this is just me and my experience and my beliefs and opinions for myself. I didn't want to give all of myself to just one thing. There is so much to experience in life. And with all the beauty and all the challenges and everything that life has to offer, I did not see myself become completely career oriented for, like, say, the next decade. And I have a lot of very close friends who are focusing on their careers and on the track to making partners in law firms. But that I knew for a fact that that was not the path I wanted. And one of the things that made me decide this is, of course, the reality of the biological clock for women, right? Like, you can still make partner at 50, but you can't have a child at 50.
Right.
So, and that's a very real fact. And that is, in fact, one of those things that I feel we don't talk often enough about, even at law school or university level or at school level or in our personal conversations when we talk about careers. But it is an important conversation to have because for women, that is a reality. And somehow, all our conversations are still very male-centric in the sense that all the career paths, everything we envision as the definition of success is somehow tailored to what men would envision as a definition of success because they can do it. They don't have to biologically carry a child for 9 months and then have, you know, the entire journey of postpartum and breastfeeding. And so, sure, it makes sense for a man to, you know, be like, oh, I'll be a partner in a law firm by the time I'm 35, 40. But the same thing may not necessarily be what success looks like to a woman who may want to experience motherhood.
Right.
So I think those conversations are important even at your university level, where you can consciously then decide that, okay, the first phase of my career is going to be from X age to Y age, at which point of time I want to focus more on my family and I want to have maybe, I want to get married, maybe have a kid or two. And then from X age to X age, again, I'm going to you know, refocus on my career.
Right.
And if we start building those conversations and giving women the courage to, and the options to actually make those choices, then I think that would change the discussions we are having. It shouldn't have to be, you can either make a partner or have children.
Right.
And it shouldn't also be that you can make partner and have children at the same timeline as men. Because that is some weird putting women on a pedestal of superwoman and expecting her to do everything that I just do not agree with. It's a very, according to me, bad glorification of the excessive labor that women have to do mentally, physically, emotionally at the workplace and then back at home and family. So the shift needs to be in the definition of what you perceive as success mm-hmm. and the paths that women are allowed, because the biological clock is unfortunately a reality. It's unfair because men don't have to think about it. But because it exists, we should ideally be taking it into account in our decision-making process. So I always knew that at a certain age in my career, I'm going to take that gap.
I think that's a very interesting point that you bring forth, which is that women should be given the option to consider in the university level that this is something that you should take into account if this is the way to go, if this is a way you want to go, if having a family is something that you actually want for yourself, then don't compare yourself. I mean, don't compare yourself to everybody in general, but don't compare yourself to your peers who might not have that as a factor, and to men specifically. So that, I think that's a very, very poignant point that you bring forth. And like you said, it's not discussed at all.
Exactly. Like you would sit down with people 10 years your senior at a good position in a law firm or litigating or wherever you want to go. And you would speak to them at length about their career and what they did to get there. And very rarely do I see these conversations ever bring up the question of marriage or family, which is a big part of life. And if you don't have those conversations soon enough, you don't factor them into your decision. And then you either get blindsided or you miss out on it, or you figure it out too late. And I just don't think that's
Or you get an judged idea way. For wanting it at some point, you know.
Oh, of course.
You know, I know that these conversations have been a part of law firms, but and it's been a while since I quit law firms. But I know even as a 23, 24-year-old, I was in rooms where people were being judged for wanting a family. And for, you know, having taken maternity leaves and saying, yeah, you know, she's out. It's going to be a while before she comes back. So, like, I'm sure by the time she comes back, a lot would have changed. Like, what are you trying to imply?
Yeah. And also people forget, if women don't go on maternity leave, there won't be a workforce a generation later.
Yes.
Like, I'm sorry, but who's going to come work for you? So that is...
such a good point. Oh my God. Yeah.
So
have you ever felt like you've been judged unfairly or discriminated against in any way for having taken maternity leave? Because you're a working mom, right? So
yes.
How has that experience been?
Yes. Every woman, I think, faces that to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about discrimination, it in fact, leave the workplace, the society, your family, your friends. Discrimination when you go on maternity or you have a baby can take many forms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you could be judged by your friends for having kids too early, or you could be judged by your in-laws for having kids too late, or you could be, you know, discriminated against in your workplace for not getting the projects or the positions you want. And I think my way of just dealing with anything in this arena was to simply just be so happy to be a mom that people didn't have the nerve to tell me anything otherwise. So, like, I think I was annoyingly so ecstatic about being pregnant and then about going on mat leave that the people just didn't have the heart to make a snide comment about how it was going to impact my career or how it was going to impact my social life. Everyone was just like, okay, clearly this is what she wants and she's really excited about it. So there is nothing that I can say that's going to make her feel otherwise. So there is no point.
That's a brilliant thing. Like, you just show up with like butterfly golden retrieval-esque energy and be like, I challenge you to say something that's going to put me down.
Exactly. I was just like, I'm so happy about this. And then eventually everyone around you is just like, yeah, she's considered this. She knows the things that can go wrong. And she's still pretty kicked about this. So yeah, like, there's not much.
What you gonna do? Okay.
Which is why I said motherhood has to be a choice that you take, and that conversation has to happen early on so that you're sure about your choice. Because motherhood, like you had initially asked me, right? It's really challenging. And when you face those challenges, you will second guess your decision. So if your decision does not have the foundation of being thought through, then those challenges become difficult to overcome. So because I had had these conversations with my mom at like when I was in university, and my mom also, by the way, inspired me a great deal because she gave up a government job just for me and my brother. And I found the difference in my upbringing from her being more present. And then she rejoined once we were a little bit older. And I think to some extent that made me realize that it is a choice that is possible. Like, you can succeed professionally and personally, and you have to create your own metrics for what that success looks like. So having seen my mom do it really helped. And then by the time I was out of university and in my first job, I knew that having a family and getting married is something I definitely want to do. And at that stage in my life, my career is not going to be my number one priority. And having that decision grounded in real life examples, in my thought process, and being okay with the consequences of it, and knowing the upsides of it, and realizing that, yes, that is also something that will make me exceedingly happy. Those are the things that then made this decision, when it did come to the point of taking the decision, finally taking the plunge, it was not something I had to think about over and over again and stress about. I'd done my thinking and I knew that this is what I wanted. And I was ready for the fact that certain other things were going to get sacrificed for this, and that was okay. And those sacrifices would be worth it.
Okay. So essentially what you're saying is, if motherhood is something that you want to do, then, and rather if motherhood is something that you want to experience, then every choice you take, and this is global, right? This is universal. Every choice you make has an opportunity cost to it, and there is a sacrifice of some other aspect of your life that comes with doing something else. So if you've chosen, if you've chosen to go to law school, you can't go to medical school. If you've chosen if you've chosen to get married, then you can't be a single, like, enjoy your bachelor life all your life or whatever. And if you've chosen to be a mother, then, and you want to be a career woman, then one is going to come at the cost of the other, and you're going to have to be okay with it. And I like what you said, that you can be a partner at 50, but you can't be a mother at 50. So knowing how to prioritize and at what time and age to prioritize what you want to do is an important aspect of this decision, which, like you said, is not talked about. And
exactly. Because you mentioned, and I'm going to take you back, you mentioned somebody who was inspired by Sushmita Sen. So I'm going to quote another Bollywood example, Priyanka Chopra. She had her eggs frozen because she knew that she definitely wanted to experience motherhood, but at the same time, her career wouldn't allow her to go through a pregnancy because she had just too many things she wanted to do and perhaps not enough time or the emotional or physical bandwidth, because she's in the performance industry, right? And entertainment. Right. You have to physically also be a certain way.
Yes.
And so she had her eggs frozen. And that level of foresight, of course, her mother is a doctor, I think a gynecologist, so that must have helped. But that foresight doesn't come without that conversation. So if you're somebody that wants to be a partner at a law firm or a CEO or anything else, and you think that motherhood at 30 or 35 might get in the way, then if you've had that conversation earlier and you know you definitely want motherhood at some point, you want to be able to explore your options, right? You want to maybe freeze your eggs. You want to understand what that means. You want to then have access to information that what does that process look like? What and whether that process is something that is worth the time it allows you. Like those are all really meaningful and really nuanced questions. And they are very much a part of your career plan. Right? Because motherhood should not ideally come at a cost to your career. People call it a cost because in the traditional sense, success is very linear for people.
Right.
It's like you enter a workplace and then you make it to CXO and then that's success. But if these conversations happen at an early enough level, you can carve your own career trajectory to include motherhood. And perhaps, for example, if a PhD is something you want to do at some point in your career, maybe if it coincides with motherhood, that makes it easier for you. I'm not in any manner suggesting PhDs are easy. What I'm saying is that I think it would be something that I would have wanted to do. It was one of the options I was considering because for me, the other options I wanted to undertake in my career were more stressful than a PhD would be.
Right.
So perhaps if you know X, Y, and Z is what I want to do in my career, you can change around the timing of X, Y, and Z for the thing that is easiest to coincide with your personal life's hardest moment, which is, you know, motherhood, because it is physically and mentally also very demanding.
Yes.
So that is why those early conversations help.
Very insightful. This is, okay, because we talked about judgment and you mentioned that there would be judgment from friends, from your in-laws, from all kinds of people around you, right? I have a couple of questions. Firstly, because you're a working mom, what did you think was your greatest challenge as a young mother who continues to work? And also, what is your greatest strength in the same vein? That is question number one. And actually, maybe I'll come to question number two later. But what about this right now?
Okay, greatest challenge. There are a couple. So one of the greatest challenges is when you're in your maternity leave and the first 3 or 4 months, it's really tough. So they go by and you don't realize what's happening. And once you settle into a rhythm, the child's also a bit older. By older, I mean like they're no longer the infant that is so fragile that you worry you're going to break them every time you touch them. So at 3-4 months, they're more stable. They can, you know, put down on the bed and you can stop freaking out about things. And at that age, then you feel like, oh, is my life just this? Is a mother all I'm going to be? And this happens even if it's a very well-considered decision, right? So around the 5-6 month mark, you start wanting to go back to work because you want to have something else to do as well. And I think that is important to recognize because if you don't go to work, you will be an overexhausted, underfulfilled mom as well. If that is something that you want, right? If you don't want to go to work, that's completely fine as well. But if you're somebody who's always done a lot of different things and not been somebody who's happy with one thing or one focus in life, which has been the case with me, like I could never do just one thing. I needed to be doing at least 3 different things at any given point of time. So to just be a mother was something that was becoming very monotonous for me.
Okay.
So I took an extension of 2 months on my maternity. But after 8 months, I was ready and I was excited to go back to work. And that really helped me because the break away from home charged me enough and gave me enough me time for me to be a very present and happy mother in the time that I was at home. So that to me, I don't think this falls strictly within the definition of a challenge or a strength, but that to me is something that not many people talk about or at least haven't spoken to me about. And I found out and I realized that, yes, this is something that's important. Like you can't if you love your children a lot and you think you want to give them all your attention, you have to factor in a me time so that you can give them the attention they deserve, the quality of attention they deserve.
Right.
It's not just about like the time that you spend with them, right? Whether that time is quality time, whether you're able to be there fully present, give them every bit of your attention, physically be with them, mentally be with them. And for that, you need some time to recharge. Like, just the way, you know, I don't completely agree with somebody who says everything is career oriented and you can't be a mom and have a career. I also don't agree with people who are leaning heavily on the side of, if you're a mother, everything is about the child, you don't have to think about yourself. If you're not a happy mom, your children are not going to be happy children. So you have to look after yourself as well. And for me, finding that was something that I navigated on my own. I had help from my mom and from my mother-in-law and from my husband. And so it was good because everyone was supportive of, okay, you do whatever you need to do to be a happy person, you know. And nobody sort of forced me into, no, now you're a mom, you must sacrifice everything for your kids. So I think that really helped, that finding that me time, space of me time. But with that, I think the challenge that came was setting boundaries for myself at work. Like making sure I was communicating effectively what my hours would be, when I would be available, when I wouldn't be available, and how to manage deadlines and urgent tasks and other things while maintaining those boundaries. Those are sort of the challenges that come with motherhood, and which is why you have to plan for them beforehand. So you cannot, I mean, maybe you can. I did not want to take up a leadership role just after maternity, even though it is something that I would have really liked career-wise. But it wouldn't have been something that would have allowed me to focus on my children. And,
right.
And at that point of time, children were priority one. Like right now, children are priority one. And it's not that work is not a priority, but it's just that I have some very non-negotiable boundaries. And that does mean that then I don't get considered for certain positions which require you to have more flexibility, or maybe work an odd weekend, or be able to take calls in the evenings. And that's all right. So I've tried very hard to make sure that people at my workplace also know what I will be delivering. And so I haven't overcommitted to anything.
Right.
And I have also made peace with the fact that with that, there will be perhaps my career progression might not look the same as somebody else's. And I've deliberately taken on roles where my career can grow without having to face sort of urgent deadlines. Like you can have a, if you have a client-facing role, then well, you can't have hard boundaries to set.
No.
But if you have a research-oriented and a writing-oriented role, perhaps, for example, if you had a home emergency on Friday, you can take some time out on Saturday to finish that up.
Right.
You have a little bit of flexibility and you don't have to be on call. So it's not that I sort of gave up on my career or anything. I just modified it with a lot of help from colleagues and, you know, supportive work environment. I modified it in a way where I was in a role and I was assigned tasks and I was doing projects that allowed me that flexibility and those boundaries. So it fits into the career trajectory I want and makes me feel less guilty about, say, perhaps when I'm comparing myself to my peers who haven't gotten married or who haven't had kids. And also makes me feel less guilty when I'm comparing myself to mothers who are not working and can therefore give most of their time to children.
No, so, I think you know, the guilt factor is a very important thing that comes in, where you're trying to do everything and be everything and aren't able to do anything properly. So I like that you said that you're setting the expectations right, where people around you know what you're going to be able to deliver and when you're going to be able to deliver, which makes me think that if you were working in a law firm, that this might not have been as possible or easy as it potentially is now. Because a law firm is a very, very demanding and a very toxic place.
I wouldn't want to damn all law firms to hell with like such a sweeping generalization. But it is true for a lot of us, right?
Yeah.
And which is why even though my first job was an international law firm, I realized that that was not the place I wanted to have a family or start a family in. Which is why at that point of time itself, I had decided that I was going to think about job profiles that would be better suited to a family. So my decision to join my current workplace was also motivated by the factor that I was looking to get married and start a family. So I did not want to be in a corporate law firm because it's a highly competitive and charged environment and wouldn't allow me the boundaries that I want to set without certain compromises, which perhaps I wouldn't want to make. And these are entirely very personal choices, right? Because for some people might want to stay in a law. I know people who have stayed in a law firm and gone through motherhood, taken maternity, gone back. I know a friend who carved out a niche for herself in the law firm environment and, you know, was able to manage motherhood with it because of the niche she made for herself and the way she worked that role around what she wanted out of her life. So it really, people's priorities really decide where they want to be in terms of their career when they decide to, you know, embrace motherhood. And for me, that looked like something that was less competitive and did not require me to be on my phone, because I'm a firm believer that you cannot give attention to anything if you have a phone that rings and you have to pick it up.
Correct.
So I wanted a profile where I did not have to look my phone after work hours. And that was one of the things that I really focused on when I was picking my next job. So, yeah, I think, which again goes back to the foresight or the conversation about realizing what your career is going to look like and making space for family and motherhood in it. Maybe I want to go back to a law firm or to litigation, which I think is tougher, or do something exceedingly competitive a few years down the line. But I knew definitely that I wanted policy experience as well. So instead of doing policy later on, I find policy easier. Maybe somebody else finds litigation easier, but policy tougher. So they don't want to do policy when they're going through motherhood. It's a completely personal thing. I find policy quite something that I enjoy enough that for me it's easy. And so that is definitely an experience that I wanted to have while I was experiencing motherhood, because I knew I'd be able to balance the two.
Interesting. Okay. Speaking about balance, it's not just about work and family, right? Like, you have a huge social life, and very importantly, you have, you know, interacted with so many different people from different walks of life. And crucial to this question, you have a very tight girl gang that I am aware of. You're friends with some of the most supportive women that I know. And not everybody in that group is in the same place as you are in your life. So how, if at all, did motherhood change your equation with your friends, especially for those who don't see life the same way you do?
See, one of the things is that definitely people can't empathize with you if they are not in the same place. And this is something I realized after becoming a mother. Because I had friends who were moms, very few, but I had a couple of friends who became mothers before I did. And for all my empathy and, you know, I'm an empath by nature, and I was like, oh, I understand what they're going through. I did not. You cannot. You cannot understand what it is until you have gone through it. There is just no other way to describe it. And I realized just how abysmal your understanding of motherhood can be until you have, you know, really experienced it.
Right.
So going into that, I realized I did not have expectations of empathy from my friends because that would have set us up for failure. Because I realized I was a bad empath to my friends who were moms. And so clearly this is not something that my other friends are going to be able to do for me. But my friends showed up amazingly. Like, they were there for me. They were there for me to hear me rant, to hear me vent. They were there as soundboards for me to take decisions. They were there when I was like, oh my God, I think I have screwed up my career. Maybe this was the wrong decision to take. Maybe I did not want to do this. They were there when I said, motherhood is amazing. It is all roses. I love my children. It's great. And when they couldn't understand where I was coming from, just simply that they were there and they nodded in agreement that, yes, we understand that you're coming from a place of your experience and we are happy to be here for you and you let us know what we can do. That matters. So, and it matters that also you have a friend circle that you can talk to about things other than motherhood.
Right.
Because they are not going through it, right? So you have some friends you want to talk about, oh my God, kids do this and kids do that and, you know, X vaccinations and other things. But then you want some friends with whom you can discuss your passions and your life and your career and goals and politics, because they are happy to discuss this and they don't have kids to want to discuss children anyway.
Yeah.
So I think I've been lucky to have friends who really showed up, even if they couldn't empathize. And that way I have definitely been lucky.
So while most of my close friends were there, showed up in a big way, and I was really grateful for it, I did lose a couple of friends along the way because everybody is busy and everybody prioritizes. And sometimes you realize that if people haven't prioritized you or your friendship for a long time, then perhaps they already have the friendships that they do prioritize. And that's not a bad thing. It's just that maybe you're not at the same place in life, or maybe you just don't fulfill certain things for each other anymore. And I think as mothers or as expecting mothers, you also become fiercer about who checked in.
Right.
So if you for 9 months didn't bother to ask me how I was doing, you don't get to be a part of my child's life. It is just as simple as that. If you didn't call and check in to see how the child was doing, then you don't get to sort of come back and be the child's favorite aunt or uncle.
Right.
You have to be present through the journey to be a certain level of included in the family, right? And I have friends who not only did they check in, they flew down to see me. They were here with me for a couple of days. They heard me. They, you know, made sure I was happy, and they dropped in the texts and they did the calls. And sure, my kids are going to love them and they're going to call them auntie and uncle, and they're going to be an integral part of their lives. And those are a very different type of friendships.
Yeah.
And then there are people you know, but, you know, they have other people they're checking in on that regular basis. And you just have to know that you're not one of them. And right. That's all right. Like, you have your own circle. So I think in terms of that, you just end up having a closer knit group of friends. And some people just completely disappear from your life because you are at a position that they have no time for. They're so focused and they're so into something else that they don't have time for a friend who's so completely into something different. And vice versa, you also most probably don't have time for what they are into. So
correct.
It's okay to lose a couple of friends along the way. You do. Just like with everything else in life.
So I have a follow-up question. How have you been able to, keeping in mind that you have other responsibilities and children to take care of, has there ever been a point where you've had to prioritize your friend first because they might be going through something really huge and they have come to you and want to rely on you? Has there been a situation where you've been like, okay, fine, you know, at this point, my friend who's always been there for me needs me. So I'm going to hand over the kids to my partner and focus my energies on her because she needs me right now. Has there been a situation like that? If so, how did you handle that?
That's a tricky one. And to be honest, your kids are your priority.
And if you have good friends, they will not be fighting for that spot. Eventually, if they have kids, they know that you will not be fighting for that spot either. Right? So it would never be a competition. If my child needs me and my friend needs me, the child is going to win because the child does not have the capacity to be able to deal with what they're going through on their own.
Correct.
The child is at a stage where attachment bonds are still being formed. They do not understand the concept of somebody else needs me more and I'll get back to you in 10 minutes.
Right.
They are at a stage developmentally until they're 5 years old where they're figuring out what attachment is. So the way you deal with them for the first 5 years of their life defines what they're going to be as adults, how they're going to see love, how they're going to approach attachment. So, and they are not rational beings. So you cannot put a child's emotions or needs on hold for something else. There is nothing rational about it. So your friends, if they really have been there for you, also don't expect for you to have a rational decision about it, because you can't. It is not logical. It will not make sense. Because the child is not logical, the child does not understand.
Right.
And so the child's needs come first. But also you are going to try your best that without sacrificing the child's developmental needs, you're going to try and do everything to be present for your friends because they have always been there for you.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you can, you know, have that tough conversation with your partner, like if your child is equally comfortable with your partner as they are with you for the particular situation that demands attention, and your partner is unavailable, well, the partner is the one you can have the conversation with. Ki, see, this is my friend. She needs me. She's always been there for me. So I need you to show up for our child.
Right.
Right? That's a conversation you can have because your partner can be rational. But it can't ever be something that you can decide between the child and somebody else. The child always wins. It's just how it is. It's just how it's got to be. So I think that way I've tried to be there for my friends as much as I can without sacrificing on my child's developmental emotional needs. And where it's been really important, I have asked my partner to step in and step up. And where it's not been possible for him either because he's also working and he has a really hectic job.
Yeah.
Well, then my friends have understood. And I think that comes from a place of them knowing that I would have done everything in my power to be there for them and still wasn't able to.
Yeah.
So you need to have friends who don't question your commitment to the friendship if you can't show up. You need to have friends who understand that you tried everything and you still couldn't. Right?
Yeah. No,
and
if you do try
everything to be there for them, then you won't always be defaulting, right? Like, defaulting is the wrong word, but you get my drift, right?
But
like
yeah.
There are going to be times when you are going to be able to show up. And that is what matters. Like, I have a friend who is not going through motherhood or, you know, perhaps the same things that I am going through. But she is still a lot less responsive than most of my other friends are. And so there are times when I've really needed her and she hasn't been there. But equally, there are times when I've really needed her and she has been there. And over the years, I've understood that that's just her personality in the sense that she does not like to be very connected all the time because it overwhelms her. And when things really do get tough, she tries her best to be there. And in that trying, she manages many times to be there and sometimes she doesn't. And that's okay. Everybody needs that space, you know?
Correct.
To be themselves also. Maybe they don't have children, but for them, something else has just as much priority as you have for your children. And it may not make sense to you, but it makes sense to them. So I think if you have mature enough and evolved enough friendships, then it comes from a place of trust ki ha, she must have tried her best. And if she still wasn't able to be there for me, that's all right.
I think, yeah, the bottom line is having faith in the commitment that is your friendship and knowing that your friend will show up. If not, then they have very good reasons for not showing up. All right. So going back to something you said a little bit earlier, which is that you have been on phone complaining to your friends about why you chose this in the first place and whether this was the right decision for you. Throughout this conversation, you have been very vocal about how much you love being a mother and how much this was absolutely the right decision for you. But has there ever been a point where you regretted starting a family at a time where most people who are your peers and your age were focusing so entirely on their careers, right? Like, has there ever been a point where you regretted and saying, "Are it, you know, if I had maybe waited a little bit more, I would have been this much farther in my career, or I would have had, you know, this much more coming in just by virtue of the position that I was in, or I would have been more prepared." Have those thoughts ever crossed your mind?
In terms of preparation, not really, because my first child was a very well thought out decision in terms of like the timing and everything and when we wanted to have a baby. So in terms of preparedness or just where we were in life, no, I haven't second guessed it. With my second baby, I'm realizing now that having two kids both, you know, so young is both a boon and a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because they grow up together. So you get to go back to working competitively and, you know, more aggressively sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're both going to be more independent sooner than later.
Yeah.
Versus if you had, say, a four-year gap, in which case then you do the first 4 years for the first one and then the next 4 years for the next one. That's suddenly 8 years.
Mm.
But for example, for me, if I have 2 years gap, then, you know, I can just get back to work that much sooner. And
sooner.
That was the sort of logic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it does get overwhelming because you have two kids. Like, they're really kids. One is an infant, one is a toddler. So that can get a little overwhelming and challenging. And so I have never regretted the decision, and it wasn't something that happened, or in the sense that we didn't plan for. It's definitely a planned decision, but also it can get a little overwhelming sometimes. So there haven't been any regrets, and I stopped comparing myself to peers or friends a very long time ago. Very, very long time ago. I think in that respect, my first job gave me all the clarity I needed. Yeah, I was never going to be... I have never actually... And I know never is a strong word, but I have never sort of really caved into peer pressure for anything in life.
Mm.
So it has never to me been a point of consideration even for decision making. And sometimes, sure, you get envious, right? Like, You look at a friend who's a partner at a law firm and you wonder, well, that could have been you because you're just as smart. But I'm sure that friend looks at you and thinks, oh, they could have had two kids because, you know, they also would like to be a mom. So I think everybody has things that they are jealous of other people about or envy other people for. But they're also aware that other people have paid a cost that they haven't. And that is why they don't have the thing that the other person has. So,
yeah,
it then boils down to what costs were you willing to pay to receive what returns. And then there it just really doesn't make sense to compare because everybody values different returns differently. Right? I might put a premium on having kids. Somebody else might put a premium on being a partner.
Mm.
And so to them, their choice is more meaningful. To me, my choice is more meaningful. And comparison is the birth of all misery. So one must never do it.
Yeah.
Definitely not in terms of career, not in terms of motherhood. Because in motherhood also, there are so many comparisons. Yeah. Like, for example, oh, did you, you know, introduce, you know, food solids at this age? Or did you exclusively breastfeed till this age? Or did you start giving artificial milk or Nanpro or whatever at some age? There is so much comparison even within motherhood that you just really don't need more. You're so... I tell any of my friends who are planning to be mothers also, I'm like, everybody lies. anybody that is telling you exaggerated tales of how fantastic they were and how they did some Herculean tasks about their career or about being moms is lying. You do you, and you realize that it is just as tough, if not worse, for other people. And once you get through it, then you come back and you do a nice interview and you give gyan to everybody. But at the bottom of it, like, it is tough for everyone, no matter what they are doing. And it is tough enough without comparing to other people. So, yeah, no. Comparisons, I don't do, and nobody should. Like, it's just, it's the bane of our existence.
That is amazing. Also, like, it is bizarre. I know that it's not outside the realm of possibility. It's just that I hadn't ever thought about it. But to think that there is competition among mothers about things like...
Oh my God, you'd be surprised.
It's just bizarre to me.
Oh, wait, then I should give you like a quick rundown. Oh, how fast did you bounce back from having a baby? Did you have a normal delivery or did you have a C-section? Did you take an epidural? Did you not take an epidural? Did you like just really plow through it like a, I don't know, cave woman? Or did you take help of certain medical science improvements that have happened and therefore had it easy? Nobody has it easy, by the way. If you have a C-section, that's 7 layers of you getting cut. If you have a normal vaginal delivery, then like, oh my God, I don't even want to get into it.
Oh my God.
Like, it's just, but you know, people compare. And the worst is, it's not just women comparing with each other. It's men comparing women. Like, his wife had like, she took an epidural, she did not. And sometimes I feel like saying, you, how do you think you even have a say in this? Like, it just, it makes no sense. And then you'll have like random relatives who will compare and be like, oh, meri chachi ki mausi ko something had this kind of an experience and she didn't give any outside milk to the baby for so many days. And then someone else be like, oh, my baby was being massaged from day one. You didn't massage your baby. Like, there is so much competition and one-upmanship in motherhood. It will drive you insane.
Oh, so
it really prepares you for not comparing yourself to anybody in life. Because motherhood is so unique to everybody.
Mm.
And in fact, this is a conversation I had with a friend of mine who's recently had her first child.
Mm.
And she was really fretting about, you know, breastfeeding and whether she should include formula milk or not. And the baby is really young and, you know, people suggest against it. And she said, and there are all these people who are telling me they did it for 6 months and they did it for 2 years and I don't know how. And I said, listen, like, please, just, you have to also be happy.
Yeah.
And if your pediatrician and your gynecologist says it's okay, then you shouldn't stress about it at all based on what the societal norm is. If your pediatrician is okay with you introducing formula milk, then you should go ahead and do it and not wait just because, you know, society thinks you'll be a bad mom if you do it, but you actually need the help. So just take all the help you can get, you know, make decisions from your gut and just avoid comparisons. They never work out for anybody.
Oh my God. This is just, it's surreal.
Oh, yes.
You think, I mean, we always talk about women not being supportive of other women, but you think that in motherhood, of all things, the most, I think it's quite literally life-giving experience. You think that there would be a little bit more support in that area, but wow, this is quite eye-opening.
I think it's also because all of us women, we have been conditioned to compete with each other in every sphere of life. So why should motherhood be excluded, right? Mm-hmm. We have other people come and tell us, oh, you did X, great. Oh, you couldn't do Y, what a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly it gets burnt into your psyche that you're a good mom if you do X, Y, and Z. You're a bad mom if you do A, B, and C. And then you start viewing other mothers from those lenses because you perhaps maybe took very difficult decisions and took a toll on your health to be the good mom.
Mm.
And now when you see somebody else not doing those things, you're like, oh, they must be a bad mom because I had to go through so much to uphold society standards of a good mom, right? So I think it's a vicious cycle that we are slowly coming out of, and it'll only happen if more moms are truthful and honest about their experiences with other mothers. And then we can all stop comparing ourselves to some superhuman standard that we didn't set in the first place and just take a breather in a process that is already very all-consuming, and maybe enjoy it more than we already are if we just stop being so harsh on ourselves.
Very well said. I think you're right. It comes down to the fact that you have to be happy as an individual to be a happy mom, and then transfer that positivity to your kids. And part of that is to ensure that, or having that innate understanding that your experience can't be compared with anybody else's. Well, this has been an amazing chat. So one last thing, do you have any advice to give to women like me who want to be moms, who are not yet in that phase of life and sometimes start questioning whether that is something for them, or for women who are well into their careers and only now thinking about that motherhood is something that they might want to explore, but are very afraid of what that could do to their life and their career? What advice would you give to encourage them to take that step?
For the second part of your question first, for women who want to consider motherhood but are well along in their career and wonder what it might be like and whether that is something they can do at that age or want to do at that stage in their career, the first thing I would say is information is your friend. So if you feel like you're too old to be a mom, well, get the facts right. Go see a gynecologist, get yourself checked, see whether you have any fertility issues, get everything in order, know what options you have, know what their risks are, because with age, the risk for certain things during your pregnancy and also for certain conditions for your child that is to be born increases, right? So you want to do that risk analysis, you want to understand your own reproductive health, and you make sure you have the information that you need to make that decision. So information is your friend and time is not. So you want to get the right people, the right source of information, the right checkups, the right health advice, and that will really feed into you making the decision, because it will eliminate a lot of the choices. You will be left with barely three or four choices that you can exercise, and then you can decide which one works best for you. Irrespective of whether you, like, those choices are going to be motherhood or no motherhood. And if motherhood, then ABC. If not motherhood, then ABC. So it's what you are capable of at that stage in your life, very realistically, medically speaking, narrows down the choices you have. So that information you should get before you make your decision. Otherwise, you might find yourself in a position where you decide to do X and then realize you can't because of something that's not in your control. And that's not a great place to be. So you want to start from a point of gathering all the information that you can. And then the second thing is understanding yourself in terms of what you really value and want. Because a lot of the times we can want our careers to be great, because that is what everyone else is doing. And the same can be true for some people who want motherhood also. It might be because everybody around them is, you know, in that journey and they think this might be great for them, when it may not be, because there are people for whom, you know, motherhood is not such a great experience. So you want to really understand what you like instead of what people around you think you like or what people around you like. So after you get the reality of the information about your capabilities and your medical health and everything else, you want to understand what the choice means to you in reality, in you know, actual emotional parameters in terms of your physical, mental health, what those choices are, and whether that is what makes you happy. And that's a tough question, I agree. Like, it's very tough. And to that, I have seen very few people, I will say this, I've seen very few people regret motherhood. Very few. I have met a couple of people who regretted not having children. And of course, I'm talking about my mom's generation, because my generation is too young right now to have or not have these regrets, right? Like, we're still deciding whether or not to have children in the first place. But in my mom's generation, sure, people have had kids and the kids have turned out to be brats and they have had all sorts of not great scenarios happen. But I have never heard them say, oh, I wish I never had this child, and actually mean it. Sure, they might say it in a fight, but I've never actually come across a parent who said it or meant it. And I have met one or two people who haven't married and haven't had kids and have then said, oh, you know, we really wish we had that to give our life some purpose. And so it's good to perhaps read up on that and look at the research and understand it as from a psychological perspective and understand it from an emotional perspective, especially if you're a woman, because if your biology is giving you the capacity to create life and you choose not to do it, I am sure it comes at some emotional cost. And maybe that's a cost that you're happy to pay and maybe you're not. My suggestion is to be aware of what that cost is.
Good point. Good advice. Great advice.
I hope it helps, because I genuinely feel that I really don't want women in my generation or in any other generation to come to a point where they thought that they were chasing something because they were lied to about what all they could do and what all they couldn't do in life.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't succeed if they had kids, or if they had kids, they would somehow be betraying something or forced to have kids because, you know, that is what everyone's supposed to do at too young an age when they were emotionally perhaps not ready for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely think the best advice is to have the information to make that decision and then to know yourself and to know the costs that you're willing to pay and to not fall prey to cliches on any of these decisions. So go speak to people, ask them whether they regret things, see people around you, see what costs they've paid, try and imagine yourself at 50, at 60, see if that life makes sense to you. Like, put in the work of understanding yourself emotionally.
And I think that is important to do from both aspects, right? You can't have information overload on one point of view, but have nothing, you know, read up on another. So you can't arm yourself with all the arguments for children and then not have anything about what it's like to not have or to be kids free, or vice versa. Like, so even an imbalance of that kind is not the best idea. It's definitely not going to give you the full picture. So balance of information, I guess.
Always. And same quality of sources for information.
Yeah, I think that's vital to be. I think also, you know, like you said, you've met people who've regretted not having kids. It's also important to meet and talk to people who are very happy that they're kids free. Because that's the kind of that getting their experiences is what's going to tell you what the true ups and downs are.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. Well, it's been such an amazing conversation with you, Sushruti. I'm so grateful that you took the time out. I know you're very, very busy and very tired. So, thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of this episode.
It was a pleasure. It was lovely speaking to you.
I'm glad.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Listeners, I hope you really enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed talking to each other and, you know, getting all of these amazing bits of information out in the world. And with that, I will see you all in the next one. Bye-bye.